Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to the Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a hell of a show for you tonight. When you look at what truly encapsulates who I am, and you look at the genre of the sport that truly has me coming back, that's Muay Thai. You know, Muay Thai is who I am. It's in my heart. It's in my walk with every aspect of my being. So to be able to have such a tremendous legend of the sport on my show tonight is truly humbling. He is a brother in life. I back him till the day I die, and I understand his walk. So to be able to have such a tremendous professor on my show is truly humbling. With that being said, let's welcome Rami Zaidan Ibrahim to the show. How you doing, Professor?
It's always good to talk to you and be with you, man. Thank you so much for having me again on your show.
Man, you're just a blessing in disguise. You know, I kind of want to give you a little bit of a hard time. You know, we were watching Glory the other day. You put up a feed about, you know, from Glory. And I was jokingly, but I asked you a question. You know, do you miss being in there? How hard has it been for you, Rami? As most of the sports world knows, anybody that knows anything about this, you know, about sports in general, know that you are one of the longest practicing Muay Thai practitioners in the world. So how hard is it for you to be in an event, to watch it unfold in front of you, but for you not to be in the ring?
It's hard, but it's also not hard. Why? You know, because, so first, it's hard because it took me so many years to finally be able to get the fruits of my labor. And I am the longest active fighter for North American history. Nobody in American history, North or South, has ever fought as long as me and as much as me. You know, and that alone is an idea to give you of how hard has it been and how long of a journey it's been. But it's been a long time coming, and finally I got to where I've got, and that's why I also say it's also not, it wasn't that hard, because I, in my heart, I know I've done everything that I could do. You know, all my career, I told myself, especially as a young child in this game coming up, I told myself that the moment that the fire in me leaves, that's when the moment I start fighting. You know, and I felt like I got to, at the end of my career, I felt like I've won everything, man. I'm like, it became hard for me to get hungry. It's like, what am I fighting for? You know, like for another fight, for another belt, for everything I've ever wanted, I've won. There's not a single belt out there that I did not win, that I not only win, but by knockout, you know? So like, there's gotta be something as a fighter that makes you hungry to want to go and fight camp, to want to go back in that ring. For a long time, I've had that for 27 years, actually, and towards the end, it became hard. And I think why the hunger left, not so much because of not wanting to fight anymore, but because of how hard it was for me coming up, and then for how hard it was for me to keep what I fought so hard for. You know, having a gym with 30-plus fighters and not being selfish to myself and giving them more attention than me, it became so much harder, you know, to focus on me. So when you are not focusing on yourself, you cannot see how hungry you are because you're too focused on other things, and those other things were taking my hunger and attention away. Luckily, man, I don't know what it is. I don't know how I got this far and won everything that I've won without a trainer at the end, you know? No matter how good you think you are, every student needs a trainer, no matter what. And I guess God was my trainer, man, and God was my coach, and God got me through it, you know? So watching these fights now, it's not so hard. And not only that, and this is something that I think I started to think as I got older, I started to realize, man, there's every age got a role to play. And you, Don, brother, you I'm sure you agree with this. As we get older, we start to see that there's a, for every age, there's a new suit to wear, you know?
Yes, sir.
And I started to understand that there's more than this fighting stuff, you know? And towards the end of my career, after I won everything, what kept me fighting is fighting for my people, for my Palestinian people. So then I started realizing I don't have to only fight for my people in the ring. I could also start fighting through my words and through my knowledge by enlightening people. So that's also why I started to understand that I don't have to be in the ring to fight for my people. I could do it in other ways.
Yes, and you truly have. You know, in the beginning part of that statement, you caught my attention because I did a post the other day. I said, you know, I don't have to worry in life when I'm down. My protector walks on water. And, you know, I got a lot of scrutiny because of it. I got a lot of hatred, you know, but that's the day and time that we live in. But what does that statement mean to you, Professor Rami?
It means that you know what you believe in, and you are not afraid to show it. What you said the other day is something that hits home. You know, it's like when I tell everybody Jesus is Palestinian. You know what I mean? Jesus walked on water, whether people want to believe it or not, or whether they want to believe it or not, he did walk on water. And the same thing, whether people want to believe it or not, Jesus was Palestinian. If you ask yourself, where was Jesus born? What would the answer be? The answer would be Bethlehem. If you ask yourself, where is Bethlehem? And if you look at geography and if you look anywhere that could put Bethlehem on the map, you will see that it's in the West Bank. What is the West Bank? The West Bank in Gaza is what is legally, till this day, called Palestine. Continuing from there, what do the Christians, the closest people to Jesus Christ, call themselves that live in Bethlehem? They call themselves Palestinians. So just like I am not afraid to say that, you are not afraid to say what you said. And it is your duty, man. It is your duty to show that. You know, and this is one of those things, like, it's, if you have something so good and you care about people, right, wouldn't the right thing be to share it with somebody? So if you know about Jesus, you should give them that information. And me, I'm the type of person, I'm pretty sure you know, I don't like to tell people through my words, but I like to tell them through my actions. So I try to show them what I am and what I believe in instead of telling them.
I love that because, you know, I look back at the show that we did on the plight of the Palestinian people, and I do a weekly talk show on Wednesday afternoons with, you know, on the syndicated aspect, because it's not like doing a Facebook Live where people can scrutinize and hate and leave, you know, really ignorant comments. This is a show where you can go, you could speak your thoughts, and I brought up the issues of the Palestinian people and the plight of the Palestinian people. And I got to tell you, you know, not only does it break my heart, but it's broken the hearts of many. You know, and I know many other Palestinian fighters in MMA and boxing and other aspects of the sport. The show I did with you, I did it because I believe in your plight. I believe in your walk. I believe in the struggles. Do I do that generally in life? No. Do I back people religiously, politically? No. But in your case, I did, and I found myself sitting back, and it wasn't because of who you are. It wasn't because of even you. It was because of a statement that you had made. And I sat back and I thought about it, and it was a statement that your mother had made to you. And I realized that...
What was that statement?
The one that she didn't want you to fight anymore. You know, that she was worried. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that she cared about you. And then in that statement you also said that she wanted to go home where she was born. And it's like, how can you deny somebody the right to go back to where their heart belongs? I don't understand it. I don't. Because, you know, my mother never told me I love you until I was 30. And my mother is full-blooded Cherokee Indian, and she was a migrant farm worker, you know, and she was ridiculed and beat when she was young just because she was Indian. And so I kind of understand some of what your mother and my mother went through. But how hard is it for you as a son to know your mother wants to go home but can't?
It's extremely hard, man. I can't tell you in words, but this has been our life. You know, this has been our life since day one, since we came out of our mother's womb, you know. And for me, like, I got a taste of what it means to be a Palestinian at a very young age. I don't know if I ever told you this, but did I ever tell you that I was kidnapped when I was young?
No,
when I was young? So, yeah, I was actually kidnapped at the age of 4 because in Kuwait, they used to kidnap Palestinian kids and to sell them on the black market and to do God knows what. And simply for being a Palestinian boy, I was kidnapped. I was thought to be a fighter since the age of 4, man. And continuing on, like, as I grew up, I had time after time, people try to silence me. People try to put me down. But growing up, you know what's crazy? My mom and dad never told me about who I am. They never told me about being a Palestinian. They never told me about what it means to be a Palestinian. And the reason why is because they were afraid that I was going to go through what they went through. They didn't want me to feel the pain that they feel. You know, the fact that they can't go home. So they wanted me to feel like America is my home. And it is my home now. But, like, they wanted me to not know that I have an origin that is called Palestine, which is my original home. And they didn't want me to feel that pain. Why? Because they don't want to go, they want me to go through what they went through. But I did, and time after time, until I had a fight in the mid-90s. And I told you, I shared this story before with you, where I had a fight with another kid who was Jewish. And to me, I didn't care who that was. I always like to say this story because this is when it all began for me. This is when my eyes woke up. You know, everybody started throwing things. When the decision was made, everybody started throwing things at me because I was a Palestinian boy. So I went back home and I was crying. I'm like, yo, Dad, why did they throw those things at me? Why did they hate me? And that's when my dad sat me down. He's like, son, it's because you're a Palestinian. I couldn't understand why. And then I started doing my own research. I started talking to my mom more about it and my dad more about it. And then my mom told me about how they had to flee and how she is a refugee and is not allowed to live again in Palestine. How my dad, who was born there, who on his citizenship, on his U.S. passport, says on the place of birth, Palestine, yet he's not allowed to live there. You know, that's why they tried to keep that away from me. They didn't want me to get attached to something that I wasn't going to be able to live in, you know. And that hurts, man. How does it feel? I can't put it in words, but it hurts. Imagine, I know you understand being of your background, but to anybody else listening, imagine you have a home that your mom and dad lived in, and then you were born in, and then you had to leave that house because simply somebody else wanted it. How will you feel when you grow up and you understand what happened to you? And then when they go back and they tell you, oh, the reason why is because so-and-so used to live there many years ago. I don't care what God you believe in. You don't have to believe in a God to know that that is wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to have a conscience.
It has nothing to do with, yeah, you don't have to be a Palestinian. You just have to be a human being with a heart.
Yeah.
This is not
a
Palestinian thing or an Israeli thing. It's a human rights thing, man. So pain, I can't put it in words how I feel about how my mom cannot go back home, how my dad cannot go back home.
Yeah, well, it truly saddened me. And, you know, to this day, when I first heard that statement from you, it dramatically changed my life. You know, I'd be a liar if I said I didn't get a lot of animosity for my backing of the Palestinian people.
I
don't care what people think of me. You know,
I'm pretty sure people have messaged you privately and have asked you and told you, why on earth are you doing this? I know for a fact.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm a journalist. You know, Pat Miletich said it the best. You're not a sports show, you're a journalist. And so I looked at that thought many years ago, and I realized journalists tell people. Journalists tell a true story. The real ones do. And, you know, it took to my heart. And the thing of it is, I don't back down from a fight. I don't back down from anything in life. There's one thing, you can call me anything in the book you want, but I'm not going to back down from something I believe in. You know, it's...
Done. That right there, what you're saying, that is the key to happiness. You know why? This is the most important thing. If you really believe in what you're saying, believe me, you will be happy. Yes, we're all going to have pain in our life. We're all going to have depression. And we're going to taste all of that. But for the most part, the key to us being happy is what you said. Doing what you believe is right.
Yeah.
That is the most important key to happiness, because it doesn't matter. It's not about your status. You could be a journalist for CNN. You could be the highest paid journalist. Whatever you want, it's not going to make you happy. What's going to make you happy is you doing what you believe in. Because at the end of the day, when you can go to sleep knowing that you are honest, you are a person with courage who is not afraid to speak what they feel and believe is right, then you go to sleep. You go to sleep easy, my man.
Well, most definitely. You know, I received a letter from the FCC after that one, the show we did on the plight of the Palestinian people. I was ridiculed. I was put on the do not fly list for probably 3 or 4 months. You know, I was, because
it showed me
the ignorance of people. It showed me that, you know, people don't want the truth to be heard. You know, you look at the news today, it's not like it was when I was growing up. You know, things are so different. I'm a senior citizen now, so I kind of can speak a little bit about life. You know, the understanding
you can
see
a lot about life.
You know, life saddens me, brother. I'll be honest with you. The way society is going, the way people are going, it saddens me. But then I watch your videos, and you and 2 or 3 other professors, I watch your videos, and I see how much pride, how much honor and integrity and humility that you 3 or 4 professors that I watch have in your heart, even though you've walked that walk, you live on that path of, you know, understanding but not having a full understanding, but yet you still create and want to create greatness for others. What is it in the heart of Rami Zayden Abraham that has you wanting to create greatness for the future, even though your path has been darkened?
what is it? What it is I grew up obviously as a Muslim, and Islam always teaches that it's not about what you have, it's about what you do with what you have. That one day we're all gonna die. Everybody that lives is gonna die. And when you die, we're gonna ask about how we lived on this earth, what we did with what we have, you know? And that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I aim to do, is everything that I achieved really, yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing, right? But it could be a greater thing if I go and I use it for somebody else. That is how you measure success, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people talk about their own success, and then they stop there. And those people, actually, when they stop, whether they're fighting, being an entrepreneur, whatever it is they're doing, they're not going to be happy no more, because they focus only on themselves. But how I measure success is by how many people I bless, because that is an everlasting success. You know, if you only focus on your own success, it's a great thing, but what happens when that success runs out?
Exactly.
You run out. You run out.
Professor, you know what's crazy, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I've been doing radio for almost 15 years. I'm a pioneer in podcasting, and have been doing radio for quite a while now. The only other fighter in my whole lifetime that I've ever heard made that statement is Kung Lee. You know, I had him on the show for the first time, and I wanted to talk about his accolades. He said, "I don't want to talk about my accolades." He says, "Young man," he says, "the way you stay who you are, and the way you grow, and the way you give back to society, is to not look back at what you accomplish, but look forward at what greatness you can give and teach." And it really took me back. So to hear you, you know, kind of reminisce and have an essence of that thought, it makes me feel that an aspect of society is going to be all right, because we have men like you that are real men, that believe in creating the future, creating an aspect. And you know, then you've got guys like me that I'll be the first to admit, you can teach an old dog new tricks, you know. You could, and what I mean by that is, I'm old, but I'm learning. You know, I can learn from a 20-year-old. I can learn from you. I can learn from Kung Lee. You know, there's different aspects in life. You know, we all think we have an understanding, but as one, we're a force. And with what you've created with Rami Elite is tremendous. What does it mean to you, Professor, to see the growth, to see the aspect of your heart and your thoughts pay off through your students?
Man, one, that's the fruits of my labor. You know, two, how does life continue? Meaning, like, how does life go on? Life goes on by people passing down what they know, by people passing down what they have. If mankind never passed down what they know and what they have, life will not continue. You know, life will come to an end because people are not sharing their knowledge, you know, to make life better, to make life go on, you know, to make sure that we still have everything we need to have a life. So that is what I feel I have to do, and that is what I'm doing. So it makes me feel so good when I see Rami Elite growing. You know, when I help one child, that child is going to help somebody else, and then that person helps somebody else. So what about when I give it back to my entire gym? My entire gym continues to make the legacy go on. You know, so going back, it's not just about me. It's if you want to look at it as the legacy will only continue through you passing it down, just like life. The only way life will continue is by people passing what they know down. And that is what I'm trying to do. You feel me? And if everybody looked at it that way, man, I swear to God, life will be so much full of peace and love. But everybody wants to think about themselves, and everybody wants to have it's that me attitude.
Oh yeah, they truly do. You know, God, I love the way you paraphrase that, because it's the passing of the torch, the giving of the light, and that's what life is about. You know, people ask me time and time again, why do I show other people how to do what I do? Why do I teach people how to, you know, start radio shows? Why do I teach people how to shoot photography? Because in life you're supposed to. You know, I lived in my heyday. I've gotten the Hall of Fame for my work. Why should I fear somebody that wants to learn? You know, who am I to be?
How did you learn? You know,
I taught myself.
Even if nobody taught you, right? Wouldn't you want to have somebody not go through what you went through, not go through the hardship that you went through, not go through the pain? I'm sure, knowing that the good man that you are, you wouldn't want somebody to go through what you went through, having to go on their own and learn the hard ways. You know what I mean? Because I'm just like me. I'm sure that if you help somebody, it's gonna make you feel good inside.
Yeah, it truly does. You know, matter of fact, you know, even if I don't get a thank you once they hit fame, it's still
which happens probably.
Yeah, it's a blessing in my heart. But there's this one lady by the name of Sherry Cook who I helped along the way, and she became famous. And still to this day, she always admits she would never be where she's at if it wasn't for me. She would never. But I don't want that back. You know, what I want is for her to find somebody and pass it to them. That's what makes your quote so tremendous. Because if we can all just reach out and teach a little bit or all of our knowledge to the next person coming up, then we're guaranteed to create a generation of people who are kind-hearted and willing to give back, and we can have society back. But people don't want it that way anymore. They truly don't. You know, why do I cling on to, you know, the Son of Palestine, the Cinderella Man, Rami Zayden Abraham? Because you're an aspect of life that doesn't truly exist anymore. And I just happen to be a person that believes in how life, you know, should be perplexed. And you're a man that walks that walk. You know, but you've been through struggles. You've been through pain. You know, how hard is it for a man of your stature to walk your walk and to try to teach your students in today's society as it sits?
It's very hard, man. Time after time for many years, my family told me, listen, man, you need to just stop talking about, you know, Palestine, and stop talking about what you believe in, and just focus on your gym, and you're going to make a lot more money. And it's been so hard, you know, doing what I do, because I don't listen to my family, because I listen to my heart. And I really believe if I actually listen to them, I probably would be a millionaire right now, just from the gym alone, you know. And even though I've won so much and accomplished so much in fighting, I probably would have done a billion times better had I listened to them and just not, you know, worried about Palestine, you know, and what's happening to them. But I didn't. And but at the end of the day, I feel like this is... Go ahead.
Do you have any regrets?
Never. Not a single second.
That's all that matters.
I'm human. I'm human. Yeah, I do want... You know, I do feel like I deserved a lot more than what I got. But this is... At the end of the day, I went to sleep knowing I did my job. You know what I mean? I knew I did the right thing. I can't, like, I'm the type of person, man, I can't see somebody getting hurt and not do something about it. And that was a thing about me ever since I was a little kid. Even when I was in school, way back in school, there was it was in Spanish class. This was in the ninth grade. And there was a Spanish teacher who was a substitute. It was for Spanish class, and it was a substitute teacher. So you already know most students don't respect their substitute teachers. When, when there's a substitute, everybody clowns. So not only was she a substitute, but she was an old woman, and she didn't really know that much English. But she didn't need to because it was a Spanish class. So everybody was clowning, and that's fine, but there was this one kid who was disrespecting her, making fun of her. And he kept trying to embarrass her and belittle her. And she was an old woman, and I felt so bad, you know what I mean? I kept thinking about, like, man, what if that was my mom? So I'm, like, telling him to be quiet, relax, be quiet, leave her alone, this, this, that. And it wasn't happening until he started getting up and being loud with her. And then when he got up to be loud at her, like to step to her, I went and grabbed him and slammed him on the wall and punched him in the face. Yeah, I know I was wrong, but, like, I feel like I can't see you stepping up to an old woman and disrespecting her and not do anything. If I don't do anything, that makes me just as bad. This is an old woman, you know what I mean? And I was only, like, 14 years old at the time. It was in ninth grade. And I couldn't. So this is the type of person I am. And I'm, unfortunately, that mentality carried on with me as I got older, and it only became stronger. It was hard, but I feel like this is my real calling, man. I really do believe that everything that God gave me not really for my benefit, but for me to benefit, to help other people reach their success and make it easier on other people. I really believe that's my calling in life, not for myself, but for other people. So it doesn't matter how hard it's been for me. It matters how much I make it easier on other people.
That's exactly what I thought you'd say, and it's exactly how life should be. You know, I'll let my listeners know, I never really, we've talked about it maybe once or twice before. I don't think it was even on the air, but the issue with lion fights, you know, and I told you when the press release was about ready to come out from Justin Kwan for them, you know, and they asked me, why is Rami's name on there? And, you know, Scott Kent was the one that asked me that. And I said, what does it matter? They asked me who are the top five. Yeah, I still can't believe you asked me that either. But, you know, the PR firm asked me, we want to know the top five people in your heart that you've interviewed that you felt left the biggest impression on you. And you happen to be one of them. And the first thing I get back after I submit this is a message from Scott Kent. Why is Rami's name on there? And I was like, what does it have to do with anything? They asked me this question. I gave them my answer. Absolutely not. It's not going to. I said, well, you know what? You could take your job and you could shove it. And I walked away from Lion Fights. And me and you had that discussion, and I told you I will never interview or work for Lion Fights ever again. And I never have. The reason I did so is because I believe in people. Not just you, but I believe in people. But you're not going to sit there and defamate an individual that I admire and I respect and I appreciate his walk. You know, the stories that we know and that we've expressed between each other that don't need to be on the air have truly enlightened me. When you were willing to give your life in a ring for a promotion, and see, that's what the casual fans don't get. When you sign a bout agreement, you're willing to give your life.
Well, literally.
You're saying, I'm willing to die in that ring for this promotion.
Well,
and because of the political aspects of Scott Kent being Jewish, he found a way to condemn the Palestinian people through his promotion. And I would have nothing to do with it. You know, to me, that's...
How does that make you feel, Don? Imagine, Don, you in my shoes, right? And you see every fighter that fights on their show is allowed to come into the ring with their flag. every single fighter. But you, Don, you cannot come out with the flag of your people. How does that make you feel? You're a grown man and you're being told you are not allowed to come out with your flag. How does that make you feel, Don? To all the people listening, imagine you're an athlete and everybody gets to represent their flag. If you watch Lion Fight, from the beginning, people were always allowed to come out with their flag. Till this day, they come out with their flag. But imagine if you, Don, you, the listener, are being told that you cannot come out with the flag of your people. How would that make you feel?
Lesser than everybody else. You know, I would feel less of a man.
All my life, Don, I had to go through this shit. And then everybody looks at me like I'm the fucking madman. Excuse my language. But I really had enough, Don. Like, you know, I just, all my life, man, they looked and they tried so much to make me seem like I'm the madman. Because they would keep poking at me. And then when I spaz out, they were like, oh, look, see, this is why. You know, oh, Rami's being crazy again. But that's, you know what's crazy? That's exactly what Israel does. They keep stealing land, arresting this kid, shooting this kid, beating your father in front of your eyes until you grow old with anger and become crazy, beating your mother, belittling and oppressing your people day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And then when you go up and you fight back, they take a picture of you fighting back and be like, you see, this is the Palestinian people. It's crazy that's their tactic. You know? But like, no matter what, man, I'm never, ever going to stop. I hope Scott Kent listens. And if he doesn't, I hope somebody sends him this. He is not a man. He is not a man. You know why he's not a man? Because in my face, he smiles. And then behind my back, he goes and tells you, oh, you can't use Rami as one of the five most influential people. He is not a man. If he's a man, he would tell me to my face. But he's not a man. That's why when he sees me, whenever he does see me, he smiles and he shakes my hand. You know,
but he can't tell you the truth.
Nah, he can't because he is not a man. People like him, they try to silence me and try to not let the world see me. They are not men. But until I die, I promise you, I will always fight with every blood, with every heartbeat in me. You know, because a man who is afraid to stand up will fall for anything. By the great words of Malcolm X, a man who is afraid to stand up for something will fall for anything.
And you know, it also brings another great statement to mind. The only time you should look down on somebody is when you're helping them up. And,
yep.
You know,
but I don't need him, man. I don't need him. You don't need him. You know,
no, I didn't need him. You know, people ask me all the time, Don, why do you take out promotions? Don, why do you turn down jobs? You know, I would rather be rich in heart and to be able to sleep at night than to take that type of dirty money. I can't live like that.
You will only be happy with that if you have a dead heart, if you do not have a conscience. The only people that are okay with doing wrong by people are people who are wrong. There's no good man, no good woman that would be okay with doing wrong with a good heart. If you have a good heart, if you have a conscience, you would not be okay with it, and you will never sell out.
Yeah, see, you know, I really understand, and I want my listeners to understand. You know, I take my life back 20 years ago. Okay, I moved here 23 years ago, but take it back 20, 21 years ago. I became the head of a division, so I moved into the nicest neighborhood in the city that I live in. Not once a month, not once every other week, but every day. I was pulled over. And I was told that, nigger, get out of your car. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not even black. You know, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. And then they would say, oh, your tail light's out. So one time I decided to fight back, and I had my son with me in the vehicle. And I got pulled over, and they were asking me what I was doing in the neighborhood. I said, I live here. They said, well, you have a tail light out. And so I said, oh, do I? Because I know I just had my vehicle inspected. So I had my son jump in the driver's seat, and I got out of my vehicle, and I stood behind it. And I told him, Anthony, hit the brakes. So he hit the brakes, and the lights came on. And he goes, oh, you must have a short. He goes, I would get that looked at. Go ahead and have a good day. And I just looked at him, and I laughed. Because I knew he pulled me over because he was wondering why a person of my skin color was in that neighborhood. You know, people don't understand that feeling. You know, if you've never been in that situation, you don't understand how degrading it is for somebody to look at you as you're their lesser or you're not their equal. Rami, I know there was a day in your life that you said, I'm not going to be the lesser anymore. I'm going to be the equal. What was it in you that inspired you to speak for the Palestinian people?
It was a fight, I think. So in the mid-90s, that story when I got things thrown at me, that's what started it. But when it really clicked, when it really, like, it made me feel that, like what you're saying is in 2011 when we all had that unfortunate 9/11 happen here in the States, I remember taking a fight, and it was for the United States Championship. I was fighting a kid, another grown man. I was a kid, and I was fighting a grown man. And as I was going into the ring, everyone was saying, go back to Iraq. I guess because in the time, our ignorant of a president told America that it was Iraq behind 9/11, which we now know that it wasn't. And all those millions of Iraqis died innocently for no reason. But that's another story. As I was walking into the ring, everyone was yelling at me, go back to Iraq. The whole floor, the ring, everything was shaken from how loud they were screaming, go back to Iraq. How ignorant is that? I've never been to Iraq. I'm not from Iraq. Nobody from my family is from Iraq. So why are you yelling at me, you ignorant people, to go back to Iraq? I have nothing to do with Iraq. That's how ignorant these people were. Can you contemplate that, Don? Like, that's like me.
Yeah,
and me
because
fighting,
I was
telling
told
you
the same thing. I've been called, you know, back when that happened, I was spit on. I was called names because I'm of dark skin, and
yep.
People assume and people would tell me the same thing, that I didn't belong in their country, and I'm just looking at, trying to figure out why. You know,
it's crazy. So when they were yelling at me, were yelling at me, telling me go back to Iraq, I was so broken. But there's a still video of it on YouTube. One of them yelled it loud, and I came to him between the ropes. When I got into the ring, I came and I blew a kiss at him, just to make him feel aggravated more and to show him that I'm not hurt. But then I went back home, and I'm like, I got to really try to get to these people. I cannot get to everybody, right? But I can get to the people of the fighting community, of the fighting world, the people who are watching me. Some are watching me to win. Some are watching me to lose. But they are watching me. And those people that are watching, I'm going to get to them. And that, out of all the things that I accomplished, that people like Scott Kent is what they are afraid of the most of me. You know, I've won I've won so much, right? There's nobody in America has fought as much as me. There's nobody in America that has won as much as me. There's nobody in America that has won as many titles than me. As a professional, nobody's holding more belts than me. Nobody became the unified world champion. All that, though, means nothing, right? The most thing that he's afraid of, people like Scott Kent, they're afraid of the fact that I'm in the public eye and people are listening. And I am getting to people. That's what he's afraid of. People like that are afraid of. And that's what I want people that are listening right now, I want them to understand. The most important weapon that you have is your word of mouth, your actions, your knowledge, you know, not your status, not what you wear, not what you, you know, drive. It's what you know and what you pass down.
Absolutely. You know, it's crazy because I do understand your thought on that, because when 9/11 happened, I went through the same thing, and I truly never understood, you know, that aspect of society.
I'm sorry, Don, but 9/11 was so painful, right? So painful,
yeah,
for every single American. But your 9/11 is a Palestinian's 24/7.
Oh,
24/7.
Yeah.
And you know what hurt? You know what hurt, man? What hurt is, yeah, it hurt everybody in America. But you know who got to pay for it more than anybody? Everybody that was a Middle Eastern or looked like Middle Eastern. For God's sake, man, there was Punjabis. They're not even Middle Eastern. They're not Arab. They're not Muslim. They actually, some of them actually, they fight with Muslims. You know, but they were getting beaten, abused in America. Anybody that was Middle Eastern or looked Middle Eastern was getting beat up, and they suffered, and they paid for that price.
You know what bothered me even more was, you look back at the time, and most people don't even pay attention to history, but Barack Obama was the president of our country at that time, and he himself is a Muslim, but yet did nothing to disengage the hate. He did nothing.
People think he's a Muslim, but he didn't do anything. It doesn't matter what you say you believe in. It matters what you do. It's not who I am. You know what's crazy? It's like, you ever heard that when people say, Don, when people say, oh, deep down inside, he's a good man. Deep down inside, he's a good person. Man, the hell with that. It's not who you are deep down inside. It's what you do in life that makes you who you are.
Yeah.
You talk about Barack Obama.
Right.
Shit, nobody ever bombed Africa until we had our first black president. It was the first black president to be the first to ever bomb Africa.
He was actually,
I
hate to interrupt you, but, you know, he was also, and it's still being perplexed to this day. A lot of people consider it a conspiracy theory, but it's not. You look at the first person to come out and break the news about Barack Obama being the first gay president our country has ever had. she died not even a month later. The second person that came out and said a statement of that nature was dead within 6 months. You know, I spoke about this on my talk show because, like I said, we do a political show. And, you know, from the evidence that I found and still look into, and Pat Miletich is actually one that is very deep into this aspect of life, too, because he runs a show called Conspiracy Farm. You know, when you look at the facts, even from the president, even from Barack Obama's own mouth, a lot of times you hear him say Michael, and then he'll catch himself and say Michelle and I. You know, the fact is, he created an aspect in society that will never be able to go back. He created an aspect that actually has made it more hard on the Palestinian people than it ever was. What is it, do you think, that it will take, if it can even be, you know, some type of lightening of the load? Do you think that there will ever be an aspect for the Palestinian people to have an opportunity to have their land back?
You know how people say it's going to get worse before it gets better?
Yes, sir.
I don't believe it's going to get better. I do believe it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And being that I believe, I believe that I'm a Muslim and I believe in Islam, I have to believe in what the writers teach me. And the writers teach me that the final battle is going to be, it's going to be there. It's going to be in Palestine. And everything that is happening right now, everything is leading to it. You know, all the major religions believe in the Antichrist, right? So Christianity, Islam, and Antichrist is going to be what? A person, you know, going and is going to be against the Christ. So everything is going to lead back, right back to there. And in Islam, we believe that the final battle is going to be there. And that's where Jesus is going to come down and he is going to kill the Antichrist. And because of what I believe in and because of all the signs is all there in front of us, man. Like, everything that is going around, most of all the problems that we have worldwide right now, go back to that one place. Go back to Israel. Goes back to them. They are the root of the main problem. And that is one of the reasons why I feel like it's not going to get better. And I don't feel like we're going to get that land back until the final battle. That's what I believe. And you get people that tell you, well, why don't you just, you know, settle for a two-state solution? I want to come and take whoever's listening right now. I want to come and take your home, right? And then after you fighting me so many times, I'll give you the smallest room in that house that was originally yours. And then after so many years of me oppressing you in every way, I want to bring up to you a two-state solution with the house that was all originally yours. After I stole it from you, I want you to be okay with a two-state solution. Not only is it not half, but it is the worst and smallest area in that house, which was all yours one day. Would you accept it? Honestly speaking, would you accept it?
No.
You wouldn't. So why should we? Why should we accept it?
No. And you know what's crazy? I don't know if you know this, or most of my listeners know this, but my show actually is being simulcast on 249 FM stations across the world right now. It's a privilege that very few in radio get, that FM stations simulcast my show live as we speak. You know, Rami, it's sad that the Palestinian people have to live this way. It's sad because their heritage has been taken from them. Their land has been taken from them. Their humility has been taken from them. And I will not sit still until, you know, there is change or we could create hope. You know, it saddens me, brother, because I hear the pain in your heart. And, you know, a lot of people, like I said, I caught a lot of hate and I'll catch a lot of hate for this, but I really don't give two craps. I stand up for what is right. And, the thing that bothers me the most is people really don't see a major aspect for what it is. You know, people don't understand that the Jews control the banking system here in the United States. The Jews control, they are the money of the United States. The Hermetic Jews and all the different aspects, they're the mob is afraid of them.
Look who controls the wars. The same person is funding both sides. the same person that is funding both sides lead back to them. Look at the name Rothschild. Research that name. If you don't know who they are, research them. Rothschilds, research them and see what they did to the world. Almost every horrible, bad, big thing in this world that happened leads back to them.
It's crazy,
but, you know,
because
you get these people and they call you conspiracist, you know, but that's what people do, you know, when they don't want to believe, you know.
Hey, well, it doesn't take that hard to look, because the mob is even afraid of, you know, certain aspects of the Jewish community, the ones that control the banking systems, the ones that control the money. You know, they truly run Washington. If you look and you do your history, it's not that hard to find. I mean, you
Washington,
really will find out.
You know, every person has dual citizenship. Everybody that is in the White House, you have dual citizenship. How the hell are you in charge of America when you are a citizen of Israel? How?
Right? It doesn't make any sense to me, nor will it ever. You know, Professor, I took you longer into the show than I said I would, but it's always a pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure, man.
Anytime I get an opportunity to share the plight of the Palestinian people through the great voice of you, Professor, it's
one day
it's
I want you to come to Palestine with me. I really do. I want you to come
there.
To Palestine with me one day.
Well, you know, after we did that last show, several people reached out and did offer to bring me to Palestine. And, you know, my manager and a couple of my sponsors said, no, you're not going right now. you're not going to go right now. But I mark my words, I will go with you, Professor. I will go with you. You know, it's something that I need to do before I rest my soul and go to heaven. I have to see it. I have to experience. I have to feel the pain with my own heart so I can understand the sorrow of the Palestinian people and their plight. You know, Professor Rami, each and every time I have you on my show, it enlightens me. It saddens me, but it enlightens me. You know, I'm going to toss the mic to you since we are on 249 stations right now worldwide. If you would like to say a message, you could either say it in English or you can say it in your native tongue. But I'm going to toss the mic to you and let you say a message to the Palestinian people or the people of the world in general, however you want to do it, sir. The floor is yours.
One day we are all going to die. And I feel like if we as mankind remember that, I feel like we will tend to straighten up in life. You know, my message is about something that I've been telling myself, that I have to get ready for that afterlife. You know, I have to be ready for that judgment day. And even if you do not believe in judgment day, right? Even if you do not believe in God, you have to believe in doing right. And if we believe that one day we're going to die, then we might as well live a life that is at least of good and not of bad. Even if you do not believe in judgment day, you do not believe in God, you should believe in doing good versus bad. And what better than today? Lately, I've been telling myself that, and I feel like that would be my message to everybody listening, my final words. Do your best to live today like it was your last day. Imagine today was your last day. Go and kiss your mother. Go and kiss your father. Go and kiss whoever you love. Do not hold back. Do not hold a grudge on somebody. You don't know if it's going to be your last second, your last day with them, or their last day with you. Live today like it's your last day, because tomorrow is not promised. Nobody knows when our final moment is, and death does not know any friend, any race, any color. Death will come to all of us. So do your best to be good, to do right by others, to forgive others, to be kind, especially to your mother and your father. Do good by them. Just like when you were sick as a baby and nobody could take care of you, your mom did, your father did. So do your best to be good to your mothers, to your fathers, to anybody that you love before it's too late. That is something that I've been focusing on, and this is my final words to everybody listening on this segment today with you, Don.
Yeah, I'm honored to get those words, sir. You know, I will always have your back. I will always support the plight of the Palestinian people to the day I die. You know,
Palestine is not for Palestinians. Palestine is for all of us.
Yeah. You know, I will bleed for you, my brother. You know, and I don't say that kindheartedly. You know, this aspect of life has truly profound and changed me. And it's enlightened me and it's opened my eyes. And I'm honored.
One day, I will have you with me in Palestine. I would love it if you come.
Oh,
see it
would be
own
my
eyes.
Honor. It would be my honor, sir. You know, Rami, I love you for who you are, man. You're a tremendous athlete, but you're a better man. You know,
thank you,
brother.
I'm humbled.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly how I feel about you. You could be the greatest athlete in the world that ever existed, but you're a better man by far. And with that being said,
thank you, good brother. You always humble me, man. You always humble me. Thank you.
Well, it's my honor. And with that being said, Professor, I truly love you. You know, and I wish the best for you and your family. And until next time, thank you for joining
the
show.
I wish all that for you as well, and thank you so much. I love you as well, man, and I hope your rewards are doubled, not only in this life but after. Thank you so much, brother.
Oh, most definitely. I love you, and thank you, and you have a tremendous evening, Professor, and good luck with your students. And
thank you, brother.
Until next time, bless you, my brother.
Free Palestine.
Free Palestine. God bless you.
Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Rami Zaidan Nebaham, one of the greatest Muay Thai practitioners, but as I said in my closing statement, an even better man. You know, if you don't really understand the plight of the Palestinian people, research it, understand it, and you'll feel the pain that the Palestinian people feel. You know, I never in my life thought I would take on a plight of another human aspect, because I myself am Indian and have lived through scrutiny and different aspects my whole life. But it's far in comparison to what the Palestinian people have dealt with. And I will share their struggle till the day I die. With that being said, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, and the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. On that note, have a good night, God bless, and free Palestine.
I said, where I come from.